This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 170, where we're going to talk to AC about Azure Express Route and catch up on some AWS cloud news. Recorded live December 2nd, 2016. The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. If you're interested in all things happening at Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, Power BI, SharePoint, or .NET, look them up on valid.nl.
Morning, AC.
Morning, CJ.
Always How you fun. Going, buddy?
Doing good. Man, it's been like, what, 2 days since we talked? 3 days.
Yeah, we recorded a double whammy this week because I'm heading to Mexico next week, and so I'm going to be out of town. So we're not going to have our regular catch-up, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, it is sad. I'm going to head to a conference as well. So I'm going to interview a few people at the SharePoint and Office Live 360 conference in Orlando that I co-chair with Matt McDermott. But yeah, we're not going to try and get together next week. Instead, we're going to just take it easy and record two shows this week and da-da-da.
Yeah, but don't worry, listeners. We will have content for you. We will not miss a beat.
Heck no, we don't miss a beat. We keep going. We're like the Energizer Bunny, man. We're charged up and ready to go. How you doing today, man?
Pretty good. I'm Energizer Bunny. I remember that ad. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Just keeps going and going and going and going.
It does, the latest commercials have him going crazy as well. So it looks he's a little more like, I don't know.
Oh, they brought the bunny back?
They brought the bunny back. It's like Energizer with like a dash of Coke in it too. So it's like he's really moving.
He's got some EDM cranking and he's he's crushing out some funky beats.
Hey, whatever works, nice. Man.
Totally. Excellent. No, I'm doing well, thanks. I'm gearing up for a bit of vacation next week and super busy at work, obviously, trying to get stuff out before I leave. But hey, last night, actually, I caught up. We had a visitor at Hyperfish HQ. Richard Derizega from the Office 365 podcast came past. Good friend of the show and of us, obviously. And he was up here from, he lives in Texas now. And I think he's lived in Texas for a while, actually. But anyway, he's up here from Texas. Visiting campus and swung past Hyperfish HQ last night. Got to have a quick chat with him. So that was really cool. It was nice to see another fellow podcaster and good friend in town.
Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So he was there. And then what? Jeremy Thakes started officially with Hyperfish this week, didn't he?
Yes, he certainly did. He's our newest member of the team.
So does that mean the sign about the, you know, this many days since the HR incident, does that mean that the number has like been sitting at zero like the entire week since he's joined?
Yeah, our insurance premiums just went up.
I wonder if he even listens to our show. I don't think he does. Yeah,
I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Jeremy, you're a I'm just kidding.
Yeah, don't touch that.
It's really cool to have him on board. Obviously, we worked together. He was on my team at Microsoft for a while back when I worked there, and we got a good chance to work together then and had great fun together and did a lot. And I'm just pumped about working together again with him and having him on board.
Awesome. Yeah, that's cool. It's you guys are just humming along, it sounds like. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's going well.
Cool. Very cool.
So this week, we're going to talk to you, or I'm going to talk to you, about ExpressRoute, I guess.
We are.
You've learned a whole bunch about ExpressRoute over the last few months and traveled the world talking about it as well. So that's something I don't know very much about, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't know much about, but we'll dig into that in a wee bit later in the show.
About 2 months ago, I didn't either.
Yeah. So it turns out it's kind of interesting and really applicable to big companies, right? So
yeah.
Really interesting stuff that we should, I will be very interested in talking to you about a little later in the show.
Mm.
But we also wanted to get into some news and bits and pieces before we did that, because this week there have been some pretty cool announcements from AWS at their reInvent conference, which is kind of like the equivalent, I guess, of Ignite, I suppose, for...
Kind of Ignite, kind of Build.
Yeah, it's kind of a cross between both, but for AWS in that world. And there have been some pretty interesting announcements there, so we're going to dig into some of that news. Do you want to kick us off with some of that stuff?
Absolutely, yeah, we can do some of this. So there's been a bunch of things. It's actually kind of funny, we're recording two episodes this week because all of this news hit in the last like 2 or 3 days since we last recorded. So I know our listeners aren't going to hear this for another week or two. One of the things that they announced is something called AWS Code Build. So AWS Code Build is a fully managed build service that compiles source code, runs your tests, and produces software packages that are ready to deploy. It sounds a little bit like Visual Studio Team Services, the hosted bit. But one of the other things that it does is it also will scale automatically to meet build volume and immediately processes each build that you submit. But you can also run concurrent builds as well. So it sounds like it's another offering that is trying to compete with like the full, you know, lifecycle, having everything inside of AWS, the same way we can do it with Azure or using third-party things. Like I like to use, I know you guys use Travis. I like to use Circle CI for my continuous integration and build pipeline. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, we use Travis, but we also use Visual Studio Team Services as well for all of our Windows components that we build and do CI/CD through that. So, or CI, I should say, through that. And it's, yeah, it's come a long way, actually. It's pretty nice. I'll have to take a look at the AWS version of that and see what they support.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's, it belongs to their family of what they call AWS Code Services that also allow you to do like automatic releases, workflow, CI/CD. This really, though, Code Build is much more about the actual compilation, running tests and stuff. It's very much like, I look at it very much as a replacement for Travis or a replacement for Circle CI or maybe even like a Jenkins. Visual Studio Team Services, though, seems to do a lot more than just this. It does all that stuff that we just mentioned, but then it also handles CI, CD, release management, stuff like that.
Yeah, gotcha. Hey, before we move on in the news, I just want to interrupt us and pause to hear from one of our fantastic supporters of the show.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Rencore. Rencore is a market leader in the code analysis space. Founded and driven by high-profile international SharePoint and Office 365 experts, their main goal is to help any organization using Microsoft's enterprise productivity environments to work more efficiently by providing software that optimizes and secures their collaboration solutions. Rencore's most recognized product, the SharePoint Code Analysis Framework, SPCAF, is the de facto standard for verifying the quality, compliance, and governance of SharePoint and Office 365 customizations. If your company is using SharePoint or Office 365 and you're struggling to get your Office 365 and SharePoint customizations under control, check them out at spcaf.com to learn all the ways SPCAF can help you.
All right, so what else have you got for us, AC?
I got more. Let's see, what else do I have here? I have AWS Shield, Managed DDoS Protection. So what this is, kind of timely too, from the attack that we had, was it maybe 2 months ago now? This is a managed DDoS protection, distributed denial of service that safeguards web apps running in AWS. It provides always-on detection and automatic inline mitigations that minimize app downtime and latency, so there's no need to engage AWS support to benefit from this. There are two different tiers. There's a standard and an advanced bit. For a higher level protection against these attacks, you can also use the Shield Advanced. That's the advanced SKU. And that's for if you want to protect things like your Amazon Route, your CloudFront, or your Elastic Load Balancing stuff as well. So it kind of adds a lot more. Advanced adds more coverage to additional DDoS protection on additional AWS services that you make, platform services that you're using.
Gotcha. Wow, that sounds really cool. I wonder if others will follow. Like, I know Microsoft does a bunch in this area. They don't really advertise it too much around Azure, but you know, they see a lot of data and attacks from all over the place on their own services, but also on their customers that, you know, run in Azure and things. And I wonder if they'll also follow suit and come out with some sort of marketed offering in this space.
I will talk about that when you ask me about ExpressRoute.
Ooh, okay. So stay tuned, I guess is the word on the street for that.
Yep.
Hey, I got a really cool one.
What's that?
This is a thing called AWS Greengrass.
Greengrass.
It sounds like something that just got legalized in California.
It does.
But it's not, and you can't smoke it. It is a new software that came from AWS, and in a nutshell, it allows you to run local compute on IoT devices that are sort of seamlessly connected to AWS in the cloud. So you can deploy this thing called like Greengrass Core, I think it's called, which is like a thing that runs locally on premises And you can deploy that on a piece of your own embedded kit or what have you. So it might be something, so say you're in the, say your customers are in the manufacturing business, right? You deploy your AWS Greengrass core on site, and it would take input from all the sensors and all of the IoT devices on the manufacturing floor and be ingesting all that information locally. And then that Greengrass core can take that data and seamlessly integrate with AWS services in the cloud and compute and storage and all that sort of stuff sort of seamlessly. And it takes care of all the authentication between those services and all that sort of stuff. So you can imagine somebody putting a solution together that includes a cloud service offering and physical devices that get deployed at the customer's site that all sort of work together. And AWS are helping you out with that with this thing called AWS Greengrass. They describe it as local compute, messaging, and data caching for connected devices. Run IoT applications seamlessly across the AWS cloud and local devices using AWS Lambda and AWS IoT. Yeah, so these, so the Greengrass core will run AWS Lambda functions, I guess, or whatever you want to call them, lambdas, is that the right word?
I guess so, yeah.
Locally, and then also connect up to their services for like storing that data, crunching it some more, doing all that sort of stuff. It's pretty interesting because it really is that they're aiming for that bridge between the cloud and on-prem in a very specific scenario around IoT. Kind of cool.
It is cool. That's very cool.
It's your own hardware, apparently, though.
Yeah.
It's not one of their things. So you put it on your own kit and deploy it to your customers, but it kind of serves as that core connector up to their cloud.
Yeah, it looks like it also gives you the ability to respond to local events without having to always take all the data and publish it up to AWS services and then have those published back down to the IoT device to then do some extra work.
Yeah, but it can still run offline as well for a bit.
Yeah. Perhaps. So it does a good job of caching a lot of the stuff and being able to work with the data that's all local, but then not use the IoT device for things like analytics and machine learning and that kind of stuff. Still pushing that stuff up to AWS and let them deal with it. Very cool.
Yeah, for sure.
So I got another one here. It's called AWS X-Ray, Distributed Tracing System. So what this does is it helps developers analyze and debug production distributed applications, such as those built using microservices. With this, you're going to be able to understand how your application and its underlying services are performing to identify and troubleshoot the root cause of performance issues and errors. This sounds a lot, or it appears to be a lot like the debugging capability we have in Google Cloud Platform. And then also some of the stuff that we talked about earlier in a previous episode about some of the diagnostic pieces that we're getting with Application Insights on the Azure platform. So another nice little offering here for doing debugging. Now, it is all just going to be specific to the stuff you've deployed to AWS, the exact same way that Google's works as well. So
yeah, no, I definitely want to look into that because it's like as we're building a distributed system, it's one of the most important aspects is having all of that transparency and seeing what's going on. So I'm always evaluating new bits of tech for that kind of thing.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Hyperfish, I know there was one thing that they announced here at the AWS security blog at Ignite about organizations and subscriptions and stuff that I know might interest you.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, yeah, dealing with multiple Azure subscriptions is my worst nightmare. Like, it's horrible. We separate different environments and different subscriptions and different accounts and all that sort of stuff. And then managing those and switching between them and logging in and logging out. And oh my goodness, it is far from straightforward.
Yeah.
So it sounds like AWS have also got this problem and are trying to solve it with, you know, this concept of an organization where, you know, you can manage multiple accounts or subscriptions or whatever the AWS word for it is, you know, with one login. And I hope Azure does something similar.
Yeah, I saw that. And the first thing I thought, I was like, well, even though AWS doesn't have it right now, or Azure doesn't have it right now, hopefully this is one of those competing features that Azure's going to say, oh, we can add that too.
Yeah, I really do hope. I mean, yeah, anyway, it is a pain. Switching accounts, switching subscriptions, even if one login has access to multiple subscriptions, just switching between subscriptions is like, sort of goes through this whole weird authentication process again, and it's just painful. Anyway.
Very cool.
Hey, speaking of people following people, AWS have come out with this EC2 instance called the F1, which is near and dear to my heart. I love Formula One, but I don't think that's what this one stands for. This is Amazon following in Azure's footsteps and are releasing this new instance type called the F1, which is the Field Programmable Gate Array SKU. And for those who didn't hear us geeking out about FPGAs after, gosh, what conference was it where this they talked about that? Was it Ignite?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
This is one of my two big takeaways from Ignite was FPGAs.
Yeah. So FPGAs, in a nutshell, they are a piece of hardware that you can program after the fact and sort of that a great compromise between purpose building a chip to do the job versus using a all-purpose or general-purpose chip to do the job. They sort of sit somewhere closer to the hardware end of that spectrum, and you can program them after the fact. They're a piece of kit. Your code runs on them, and they're super, super quick to get your job done. And the idea with these things is, you know, at mass scale, you can crunch numbers way, way, way faster and get jobs done much, much quicker. And you go listen to that show. I can't remember what number it is, but it was probably one of the ones from the Ignite week where we dive into a little bit about what it means and some of the examples they gave. But yeah, they were basically, I think one of the examples we gave for Azure was translating all of Wikipedia's content or something in like less than 2/10 of a second or something absurd like that. So incredibly fast processing. But it looks like AWS have followed in Azure's footsteps. And I wonder if this was their, you know, from the hip reaction to Azure coming out with these. It's been a few months. I guess it took them a little while to get them out, but I'm sure they were working on them at the same time Microsoft was.
Yeah, this sounds, because I know the Microsoft project has taken about a decade for them to get it out the door from like from the first ideation all the way out to actually being able to use these. And then same thing, I know Google's been working on it as well for their cloud, and now AWS has it. So it's clear that they've all been working on it. They all see this as like the next step for, I guess, to jump the Moore's Law bit about just adding more CPUs and more transistors on a chip. This was the big thing that was going to be able to have us jump, have a huge performance jump. But so I'm sure that they saw the Ignite news and they're like, oh, we got to mention this at our conference as well. But I think what's interesting about this, Microsoft seemed to say, one thing that's different is that Microsoft is using FPGAs for Bing right now, and they're slowly rolling it out through their entire, not slowly, but it's taking time to roll it out through the entire Azure cloud. And they're going to use this in a lot of different ways, including like in the networking space. But what's different I see about AWS is that AWS is actually has an EC2 instance that you can go play with FPGAs today in preview.
Gotcha.
So with Azure, I don't believe we can play with it yet. We just know that it's coming and how it's going to benefit stuff. It's like a, hey, we've got this cool new infrastructure. It's going to make things a whole lot better, but you can't play with it just yet.
Gotcha.
AWS is kind of saying, hey, they haven't said how they're using it, but they're saying that you can actually take advantage of these things. So
gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, really nice. Gosh, I'd love to have more hours in the day to go play with this stuff.
Oh, I know. I'd love to have just a week. I'd love to have a month just to go play, or like a week every like 2 months or every 3 months to just do R&D and mess around.
Totally.
But
totally.
Hey, another bit that they had here, another announcement that I have. This will be my last one for AWS. I'm sure they had a lot more, but they are, and Microsoft is working on this too for their VMs. This is just taking time. But they're announcing IPv6 support for S3. Earlier, they've announced IPv6 support for S3 CloudFront route and their application firewall. Now they're taking a huge step and announcing IPv6 support for their virtual private cloud and all their EC2 instances that are running in their VPC, their virtual private cloud. As of now, it's launching only in the East US region, but it's in the works for the other one. So I know Microsoft is working on this too. I know it's a big deal with big enterprises and the addressable space and the fragmentation part of the addressable space, but I know this is a huge deal and AWS is there.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Hey, on a slightly different tangent, I've got some Microsoft news about their cloud.
Oh, yeah.
In the UK, Microsoft is going to increase their prices by much as 22% in the United Kingdom, the UK, because of the pound's recent decline, and how the, you know, this article comments about how it's going to hit government and businesses and all sorts that use the Microsoft cloud due to the pound's value decline recently, which is interesting. Microsoft does this from time to time. This is nothing new, cloud specific. Microsoft does this periodically from time to time around the world for its software business in general. I used to work in New Zealand for them, and every now and again, every couple of years or whatever, there'd be price sheet changes based on currency fluctuations and all that sort of stuff. But it does raise an interesting point that with the cloud, this is much more straightforward, and you know, things change at much faster speed in the cloud anyway. And so will we also see pricing changes much more quickly and much more fluid, I guess, to track the currency?
Yeah, we saw this. I mean, this isn't just Microsoft doing this in response to the British pound decline from the Brexit referendum that happened, I think, back in July or in June. We've seen, they say that the pound has fallen by about 18% since the referendum. Companies like Unilever Unilever, I don't know how you pronounce it, they've passed on a 10% price increase to all the supermarkets. Nestle, that do Kit Kat, Nescaf, and chocolate and everything, they've had a price hike. So Microsoft is saying that their enterprise customers are going to see an increase of up to 13% for software and 22% for online cloud services in response to this as well. So heads up, it's coming.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway.
Okay, so that's some news, some AWS bits and pieces. The second half of the show, we're going to talk to you about ExpressRoute and Azure. But before we go and do that, let's hear from one of our fantastic sponsors.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by ShareGate. ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users to be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 365 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check them out at ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
All right, AC, so you've been a busy boy running around the globe recently talking about Azure ExpressRoute. So first up, why don't you kick us off by telling people what this thing is first and foremost, and then we'll dig into a little bit more of the detail.
Sure. So let me just preface this with I'm a developer, right? So this is all networking stuff. And I worked with somebody at Microsoft to go deliver some material that they had over in, I guess, in Tokyo and in Sydney, Australia, a couple of weeks ago to a bunch of ISVs and ISPs and I shouldn't say ISVs, solution integrators, SIs, and ISPs about what this was and specifically like, what's going on and stuff. And so I'll explain kind of why I did the training in a little bit as we get into it. But the whole other thing was around ExpressRoute, and specifically my role was ExpressRoute with Office 365. So ExpressRoute is an offering that Microsoft has from Azure. And effectively what it does is it allows you to have a direct connection from your network to the Microsoft network and having that in a much shorter thing. So let's compare that to what you do today. So let's say I'm a really big company. This really only applies to really big companies because this is it's a pretty expensive thing and it's a very specific use case. So let's say I'm a really large company and let's talk just about Azure for right now. I got a big investment with, say, virtual machines and storage and whatever, just different things with Azure. And today, if I don't have ExpressRoute, the way I access all of those things is by connecting to Azure over my public internet connection. So I've got a big pipe coming in to my company from, in the US, we have people like AT&T and Verizon and Time Warner, Comcast. Mm. And so we have a connection that we're using the public internet to go connect to Azure. And I can secure that by creating like a site-to-site VPN or a point-to-site VPN or the different options inside of Azure so that it's a secure connection, but I'm still going out over the public internet. So what ExpressRoute is that there's a couple different ways you can look at it, but ExpressRoute in the context of Azure, there's two offerings. And what they allow you to do is to buy a second internet connection from your ISP. So now you'd have two connections from Verizon. I'm using Verizon just as an example, but is it really any ISP that supports this? Any ISP that supports this and that Microsoft has partnered with, which there are a lot. What you would do is you'd have a second connection, and then you would make changes inside of your router that says if it's a request that is coming from our network and is going to this range, then I want it to go out over, let's call it connection B, connection new. Connection B is our new connection that we just have. That's going to go out over this new connection we have. And it's effectively like I like to refer to as like an express lane or a high occupancy vehicle lane, HOV lane, that's going to go straight to the Microsoft network a lot faster. And so the goal is to get from the outside of your customer network, of your corporate network, to the Microsoft network as quickly as possible and not go jumping through as many hoops as you can going over the internet.
Yeah, so in a normal scenario, right, if I wanted to RDP into a virtual machine in Azure, right, I open my RDP connection up, that traffic is going from my laptop, so to speak, through a bunch of internal switches and hubs and routers and stuff to my external connection to the internet, right? Then it's going to, and let's keep using Verizon as the example here. Say Verizon was my ISP. So it would go from my external internet connection into Verizon's network and then out onto their internet connection, right? Across the internet through a bunch of other people's routers and hubs and switches to Microsoft's ingress point to their network. Then it would go into there and then into the right spot in Azure and then all the way back out. So it's kind of, it can be quite indirect, right? Like if it can be through a number of different hops and through infrastructure that you don't necessarily control. You're at the whim of some public internet infrastructure, but you're saying, instead, my RDP connection would go from my laptop out to my external egress point, right? But instead of going, it would still go to Verizon because it's still a Verizon connection. But instead of going out from Verizon out into the public internet, it would go straight from Verizon into Microsoft's network.
I'll throw this out there to be a little more, to give you a really good example that I think that helped gel in my head. Let's say, for instance, that you have a virtual machine in one of the European Azure data centers. And if I'm sitting in North America and I try and access that data center, my connection is going to be going out. It's going to see that VM is actually living where the IP is. It's living out in the Microsoft address range, but it's living over in that data center. That connection is going to be using the public internet to go straight out over the Atlantic Ocean, public internet again, to get over to that data center. Hmm. What ExpressRoute allows me to do is you actually have, there's what they're called, their peering locations. And so they're different. Mm-hmm. There's tons of these around the world that Microsoft has set up. If I'm sitting in Atlanta, Georgia, and there's no data center anywhere around Atlanta, Georgia, a Microsoft Azure data center. And so if my company, let's pick another company, for example, Coca-Cola is headquartered in Atlanta. If I'm Coca-Cola and I want to get to my virtual machines that are living over in EMEA, over in Europe, if I'm doing it without ExpressRoute, I'm going out over using my public internet connection to get all the way over there and to get to Europe and to get to my data and to get to my virtual machine. Hmm. But if I sign up to ExpressRoute and I pick a peering point and I set a peering point to be in Atlanta, then once I've set up my routers at my location, when I make a request to go get to that virtual machine, I've set up my routers to know that when I've created this ExpressRoute circuit, Microsoft is going to broadcast all of its BGP routes. So those are, I'm sure that most of our people have heard most of our listeners have heard of TCP/IP routing. BGP is for like the big network space, and that's what you use basically out on the internet. It's once you get to our corporate networks, that's when it gets more TCP/IP. All of the routes that Microsoft has internally, they're broadcasting those out over ExpressRoute and out over the public internet. And so when my router sees a request from my laptop to go to this virtual machine, it's going to say, oh, I have two routes to get to that. One is over ExpressRoute and one is over the public internet. The ExpressRoute option is a preferred option. So I'm going to send that request to the local peering point in Atlanta, jump on the back of Microsoft's network, and then you go use Microsoft's network to go out over the Atlantic, get data from the European data center, bring it back over Microsoft's network over the Atlantic, and it's going to come back to me through Atlanta. So that way, instead of using the public traffic to go all the way through, I'm using the express lane of Microsoft to use it. Now, the reason why that's important is that Microsoft statistically has the second largest network in the world. It's one of the most, they've invested a ridiculous amount and have twice the capacity and twice the bandwidth of what they need for both them and all their customers. You're also benefiting, though, from a lot of security that Microsoft has set up on their network. So Microsoft's network, we talked a little bit about AWS earlier and their security offering for their managed DDoS protection. So what's interesting, some interesting statistics around is that Microsoft sees an average of around 300 DDoS attacks every single day. But most of the time, all those DDoS attacks are not customer assets, not like our VMs or our websites or anything. It's usually about Microsoft's big services like Office 365, Xbox Online, stuff like that, or Xbox Live.
Yeah.
And what they do is they've got all this really cool stuff that's been set up using machine learning and stuff to figure out where these attacks are coming from. And these attacks are usually mitigated, or generally they're mitigated at the edge. So where that attack touches the edge of the Microsoft network, it never even gets into the network. So if Microsoft is under attack, you generally don't see it on your VMs because you're fine. It's being mitigated at that location. So if Microsoft sees that an attack is starting in, say, China, and it's targeting the Eastern United States data center, Microsoft is filtering out all of that traffic, or a majority of that traffic, as it enters the Microsoft network over in, say, Hong Kong or over in China, not when it hits East US. So the traffic isn't really blocked. It's just filtered down. So let's say, you know, if they're getting slammed with 100,000 requests, it's getting scaled down to just letting 10 of those requests in. So usually we're not even aware of it. So that's some of the benefits you get from it. But the idea here is that you're trying to get your request front that leaves the edge of your customer network, of the network that you have, and you're trying to minimize the amount of time you're out on the public internet to get on the back of Microsoft's network. Once you get to that Microsoft network, the advantage there is that Microsoft can provide the SLAs, the bandwidth, and everything that they have because they've got the capacity, they have more control over it internal.
Yeah, I don't know if a lot of people understand what this Microsoft network is, but in effect, it's a big private network that covers the globe, right? And that includes privately owned fiber links between different countries, rented fiber links off different providers, all connected. And so they've got this ultra fast, worldwide, almost sort of internal internet, if you will, right? It's how they deliver their services to all parts of the globe. Then the interesting part is the number of ingress and egress points in and out of that network. So if you're in a country or close to one of those ingress and egress points, you can get into Microsoft services super quick. And the more hops you have before you get into one of those ingress and egress points, the slower things are going to be. But the idea with ExpressRoute is to sort of short circuit those hops between you and the Microsoft network and get you into the Microsoft network as quick as possible. It's actually really interesting. There are some maps that have been published on the internet of different providers' networks like this. And I don't think a lot of people fully grok and understand or realize how complex and how widespread these things are and what a monumental piece of infrastructure they are.
It really is. These events that I did over in Japan and Sydney, it was an NDA. They were NDA level events. So I was sharing some information that was not, that some maps, these maps you discussed that haven't been published as well. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with the Microsoft network and I'm familiar with Azure, but I was blown away at the scale of this thing. And especially, I mean, like even just simple stories like Microsoft laid a dedicated fiber circuit from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, down to, I think it was Sao Paulo, down in Brazil for the Summer Olympics this past year, so that they could handle all of the stuff for NBC with the encoding and all that that they need to do with Azure. So it's interesting. Microsoft is using Azure ExpressRoute for all of their services. They don't even, now the different like Microsoft locations, like if you have a Microsoft office, I know we have one here in Florida in Tampa, they use ExpressRoute to connect back to all the corporate services. They don't have special networks, special WAN set up that where they're using like the way we used to do it. They're actually using ExpressRoute to do it. And it's helping them move more and more of their stuff over to Azure. I think they're in a multi-year plan where they're trying to shut down all of the Microsoft IT data centers, shift everything over to Azure, and then use ExpressRoute to leverage that. They're about halfway through it. They've been able to shut down 3 data centers so far. In order to do this, and there's some interesting aspects to it too. I mean, that you got to pay attention to. Like, does this replace the need for you having a firewall of your stuff on the ExpressRoute? No, you still need it because effectively, what you're doing is you're extending your network to Azure, and so even when you do that, I could go create a virtual machine that did like a port scan, scanning all the open ports inside Microsoft network. Well, guess what? If you're on ExpressRoute, your network is now part of Microsoft's network. And so now I could be port scanning yours as well. So
yeah, I mean, it's not your network, right? You've still got to treat it as public to a certain degree. It's just super quick and low latency.
Yeah.
Hey, so how do you buy this thing? What's the deal? Like, what sort of customers would this suit and how do they buy it?
So I'll explain that, and then I want to talk a little bit about how ExpressRoute with Office 365 works.
Yeah.
Because that's a totally different animal. It's the same thing, but it's very different. So if you wanted to...
same, but different.
Yeah, same, but incredibly different. So to buy ExpressRoute, there's basically two things you have to do. You go to Azure, you apply, or you say you want to go buy an ExpressRoute connection. It's just a normal like Azure service you buy. There's two SKUs. There's a standard SKU and a premium SKU. Standard SKU just basically says that you can jump around to different things in the same region. A premium SKU says, the example I gave earlier, where I can jump on the back of a Microsoft's network and traverse over to EMEA, which is a different region from America. Gotcha. So premium lets you do that, and premium also lets you broadcast more routes. Mm. So once you do that, once you set that up, you get this key, and then you have to go to your ISP, get them to provision a circuit. You give them this key. That's what provisions it with Azure, and then ta-da, you're all good.
Gotcha.
They're not cheap. I mean, you're looking at this is something that is really intended for like the Fortune 1000s, the Fortune 2000s, the really large organizations. Maybe not multinational, but definitely it falls in the multinational category. And we're talking in the $50,000, $100,000 range for per year for this, just to use ExpressRoute in the circuit.
Gotcha.
Now, the difference is that I explained how it worked with Azure, and I did it in a nutshell. With Office 365, it's similar, but very different. So the reason that I was doing this kind of training stuff and what people may be unfamiliar with, that some people were surprised that when I said I was doing this, is that what Microsoft did is when Azure first came out with ExpressRoute, then people said, I want to use it for Office 365. And at first, Microsoft said no. And then they said, okay, yes, but here's what you have to do to make it work. And I think that there was a little bit of an expectation from Microsoft that this would not be very hard to do. And they were not asking much from the customers to do to make it work, specifically for Office 365. But I think they learned and the customers learned that, oh, wow, this is a lot of work to get it implemented. It is a lot harder and it's a lot easier to completely hose your entire network. So they pulled it back in Q2 of 2016, they said, nope, nobody can do it now. And then they came back in the last few months and said, okay, you can do it, but by default, no one can. You actually have to apply for an exception to be able to use it.
Got it.
And the reason for this is you have to go through a whole assessment. So how is it different from Azure? Well, fundamentally, Azure is broken down into two main things. There's a public part of Azure. That's all the public PaaS stuff, websites, storage, stuff like that. But then there's the private side of Azure with VPNs, virtual private networks, and stuff like that. Well, with Office 365, there is no private part of Office 365. Office 365 is designed as an internet service from the ground up.
Yeah.
And so every single thing that you can do with Office 365 is available over the public internet. There is no way to lock it down and say, you can't access it from there's application level security that you can do to say that you can't access this from off the corporate network, but
yeah,
it's public.
But there's no concept of like a private network connection in Office 365. No. You know, like in Azure, when you go create a virtual machine in the ARM mode, right, you can go create a network that sits on that is not connected to the internet.
Yeah. Well, in fact,
private network.
In fact, by default, you have to explicitly do something to expose that machine to the internet.
Gotcha.
Right.
So, but in Office 365, you don't get that choice.
No, it is, you're open, you're out there.
Yeah.
So the way that this works, the reason why it's so different with Office 365 is, let's go back to some of the example that I gave a minute ago. Let's assume that your company does not have ExpressRoute, you're using Office 365. So today you've got an internet connection. Again, let's just stick with Verizon, but we're not playing favorites. It's just any ISP. I've got an internet connection. I'm going to call it my primary connection, and I'm accessing Office 365 using that primary connection. That's how everybody does it today. But I look at it and say, you know, we really buy into Office 365. So we've moved all of our Exchange, all of our SharePoint, we've moved Skype for Business. Everything is now on the public internet. And so it's really congesting our public internet connection. And not only that, we're also having some service issues specifically around things like Skype for Business, because Skype for Business is a lot more chatty because there's a lot of voice and video that's going on. And so you have these concept of things like, you know, quality of service or QoS markings to say, you know, hey, when the network is congested, QoS markings on the traffic say this traffic takes priority over everything else. We're able to signal it like that. When you use quality of service markings and you're using something like Office 365, quality of service is not respected over the public internet. In fact, Microsoft's network drops the quality of service markings when it gets to their network if you're coming over the public internet, because the public internet can't guarantee where those were added. So What some people, what you would want to do is say, well, instead, let's create a separate connection. So we'll call this our ExpressRoute connection. We still have our public internet connection with Verizon, but we're going to create a second connection with an ExpressRoute connection, and we're going to modify our router to say, anything that's Office 365 related, I want to go out over this special connection, and I want everything else to go over the public internet connection. So it sounds the exact same like I did with Azure, what I talked about with Azure a minute ago. And it is from that point. But there's a couple really big differences. First of all, not everything in Office 365 can be accessed over ExpressRoute. There are some public services like CDN, like DNS lookups, like certificate revocation list lookups, like the installers, things like Office Pro Plus, Skype for Business, all those clients, those all come out over CDNs and things like Akamai.
Gotcha.
And some services like Yammer or in some other things like e-discovery and stuff, those things are not supported on ExpressRoute. And so
interesting.
You can't just have your router set up to say, if it's 365, everything, go this way, otherwise go that way. You actually have to get smart and say, if it's this, go this way. If it's this, go that way. And you got to make sure you set it the right way. But
and managing that over time as well. I bet those rules change.
Yeah, I'll come back to that in just a second. But here's the part where it gets really dangerous here. And this is where Office 365 gets challenging. When you change the way that traffic's going, the other thing you have to do is you have to broadcast to Microsoft the route that those things should take to come back. Because if I send a request out to get my, like if I open up Outlook and I misconfigure my network, if I open up Outlook and I have ExpressRoute, then Outlook's going to pop up and say, I'm connecting to Exchange. And it's going to Exchange Online to go get my mail. But it never responds. Why doesn't it respond? Because my routing is set up incorrectly so that when Microsoft gets that request to get to check mail from Contoso, if the routing is not set up correctly, then it's going to respond to that request back over your public internet connection.
Gotcha.
And when the firewall sees that coming in, it's going to say, I don't have a matching request for that.
I don't know what to do. Yeah.
Not only I don't know what to do, but it's you're responding to something that I never got a that I never sent a request for. I'm going to drop the traffic, and so Outlook doesn't fail. Outlook just keeps saying I'm connecting, and it never gets it gets a response of acknowledgement, but it never gets the data back because the data is being sent back a different way, and all of our normal stateful network security devices are usually dropping that stuff.
Gotcha.
So you have to be really careful about how you set these routes up. Those are called asymmetric routes. Symmetric says, I go out over network B, come back over network B. Or if Microsoft is initiating a connection to you, Azure does not initiate any connections, but 365 may do that, like Skype for Business, like anything hybrid, like anything hybrid with like SharePoint or Exchange. When they initiate a connection back to you, you've got to do the same thing. You've got to respond on the same bit going back. So if you've got, like the picture that I kept using was, if you've got a public circuit, and then you've, and I'm using my hands here, so all the listeners aren't hearing this. Sorry, I'm going to do my best to explain it. But if you have a public connection going out from your network over to Office 365 and a private connection, which is ExpressRoute, if you get a request from Microsoft for, say, a federated login, that's going to come out over the from Microsoft through the public internet to your ADFS boxes. But if you've broadcast those ExpressRoute routes all the way into your network and it covers those ADFS boxes, then the response you send is going to be out over ExpressRoute, and Microsoft's going to drop it saying, we had no request to match that.
This sounds like everything you could set up and it could all go swimmingly. And then one day, just everything magically breaks. Everything's hosed.
It really is. And there, it's challenging to maintain. Microsoft publishes all the IP ranges, all the URLs and stuff. But and they tell you that they shoot for a 14 to 30 day notice that we're going to make those changes. But that's not always the case. You really want to do domain changes because sometimes there's an emergency, like a DDoS attack, and they got to make a change right now. Or maybe the security guys haven't been watching the RSS feed. Or hey, even worse, this one I think is the more challenging one.
I mean, people forget to renew SSL certificates, for goodness sake. The same thing's going to happen with this, right?
Well, and these networking changes, they don't happen overnight because Microsoft's a big network. They're going to roll out these changes through all the routers over the course of a few days. And so you can't just make one change for this IP address because it may not work today, but it'll start working tomorrow or in 3 days. Or it may it may work for the European part of your company, but not for the North American part of your country, because the Europeans have already had theirs rolled out, and North America's waiting for their rollout.
You're making my head hurt, I see.
So that's the thing, is that the reason I was doing that training was to explain what the exception process is like. And so there's a lot of piece to this where I was explaining how ExpressRoute helps with like the whole clause marking thing, because if the data comes across to Microsoft over ExpressRoute, they do respect the clause markings. You have to go through a network assessment from Microsoft or a partner, submit that data to Microsoft and say, I want to use ExpressRoute for Office 365. Here's the assessment we've done to show that ExpressRoute will help us, because a lot of times it might not. So here's one more example I'll give you, and this is kind of hit it home here. Let's say, for instance, that I set up ExpressRoute thinking I want to make my stuff so much faster to get my mail and Skype for Business and all this stuff. And I'm here in North America, but I have my Exchange, my data for my tenant in Office 365 is actually up in a data center up in Seattle, but I'm now traveling in Europe, right? Mm-hmm. When I go to make the request, if I don't have it set up to where DNS happens, where my local egress happens, which should be in North America, Microsoft gets the request from me saying, where's my Exchange server that I'm supposed to hit?
Yep.
Microsoft says, oh, I see you're coming from an IP address inside of Atlanta. So I'm going to give you the IP address of a local, or at least as close as I can to you, to a local Exchange box that's going to jump on the Microsoft network and then going to be able to get your data from Seattle. But if I have my DNS set up with ExpressRoute to do egress at a peering point, say in Europe, because that's where my company headquarters is, then now I'm in Atlanta and I'm going all the way over to Europe to get over the public internet to ask Microsoft for my email that's all the way over in Seattle. That data is being sent from Seattle back over to Europe and then back over the public internet back to me in Atlanta. It's woefully inefficient. And so ExpressRoute can make it a lot worse. And so there's a lot of stuff. I was there mainly to educate customers on, and not really customers, but people who are implementing this and selling this for Microsoft, to educate them on what the challenges were around this and why you have to go through an exception process, because it's not a simple turnkey thing. I've talked to a bunch of people about this that said, you know, once they did their assessment, they came to realize that their Skype for Business networking issues were not going to be solved by ExpressRoute. That would actually make it a lot worse, and they'd spend about $100,000 to $200,000 standing it up, when really they just had to replace a couple routers inside their corporate environment, and that would have fixed the problems.
Yeah, gotcha. So it is certainly not a silver bullet by the sounds of it.
No. But it is fascinating, man. It's a world that I don't generally do the networking stuff, but I mean, I ramped up, went through a lot of meetings, got a lot of content and everything, learned about the process and stuff. And I was mostly there to not to answer the technical questions, but I was around all the technical guys and listening to it. Man, it's freaking fascinating. The Microsoft network blows me away now. I was floored at the asset they have. I mean, the Microsoft network is an incredible asset by Microsoft.
It should almost be called, you know, one of those nationally strategic infrastructure assets, right?
It really is.
Certainly within the States, but then also around the world, because so much of the world's, especially business data, flows over it with Office 365 and various other Microsoft services. So, yeah, I'm sure Microsoft works with various governments to ensure it stays up and running.
Yeah.
But hey, Google do the same sort of thing as well, from what I understand, and as do others. It's just Microsoft has many, many years of doing this, and their network is pretty broad.
Yeah.
From what I actually hear, though, Google has more ingress and egress points around the world than Microsoft does.
That I don't know. What I do know, so I know that Microsoft has the second largest network in the world. Guess what the first one is?
The internet.
Yeah, the internet. So it's really interesting. I mean, there was some stuff that was shared as far as NDA goes. There was some stuff that was shared in these different sessions about the difference between how Google does it and how Microsoft does it, and some of the plans that Microsoft has going forward with networking and things that customers can take advantage of. And it's impressive. And seeing firsthand what the FPGAs are going to be able to do specifically for networking for Azure. Oh my God.
That's so cool. Yeah, it's really interesting because it's not a space you and I usually play in. So it's I find that stuff incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Nice. Hey, well, that's really interesting learning a little bit more about ExpressRoute for Azure and for Office 365, and you know, what it's all about and how tricky it is to set up, I guess, and some of the scenarios it solves. So we appreciate you coming on the show, AC, to talk about that.
I'm a special guest today. I'll put some links.
Right.
I'll put some links to ExpressRoute in the show notes, and I'll also put a link to a session that Paul Andrew did co-presented at Ignite that walks through the entire, I think it's 12-step plan, 10-step plan that you have to go through for the network assessment.
Gotcha.
So it gives you an idea of like what you're looking for, but like just on par. You're looking, if you're going to do this for Office 365, you're looking at spending anywhere from $30,000 to $60,000 on a network assessment and then spending another $100,000 to $150,000 on your Azure ExpressRoute connections. You have to use the premium SKU, and then all the configuration setup and stuff goes, and you're looking at a project that's anywhere from like 4 to 6 months long. So it's a significant thing, and it's definitely, I'm never going to be a customer of it. I don't see, with all due respect, I don't ever see Hyperfish ever being a customer of it. It's definitely a niche market.
Yeah, I think you got to put on your big boy or girl pants to really start jumping into that territory.
You got to have your pants custom tailored for this stuff, man.
Excellent. Well, thanks, AC, and cheers for another great show.
Absolutely. Have fun in Mexico. You're already there by the time people are listening to this.
Dos cerveza, por favor.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes for each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us. Participate in upcoming interviews and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.